Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film. And today, on today's podcast, I've got with me Matt Matum.
Hello.
And also another Matt, but Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. On this week's podcast, we're going to be discussing Sonic the Hedgehog, Emma, and a couple of classic re-releases, Ghost and Lost Boys. But first, let's get Fast and Furious.
I am living my best life on Earth.
Wah!
Ow! Let them play Sonic! Let the Pitcher's Mound also Sonic!
Ugh, I can't with that guy.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so that was Sonic, which Matthew and I saw on a Sunday morning.
We braved the storm.
It was very stormy, but we came out to see Sonic the Hedgehog. And I have to say, I had quite low expectations, obviously, after all the hoo-ha with Sonic's big teeth that we saw in the first iteration. They've changed that. Have they made it better, Matthew?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. He's not as alarming looking as he was in that first trailer. They've certainly done their work there. He's a much more cuddly character. And not quite as irritating as I was expecting as well from the trailers, because he seems quite sort of cocky and obnoxious in some of the trailers, but I did kind of warm to him over the course of the film.
How are we getting into Sonic and his world in this?
Yeah, well, it starts off in some kind of alien hedgehog world, and he has to leave his world because he's got this great power. He can obviously run faster than anyone, so people are after him, and so he escapes into our world, and where people want to chase him and get his power as well. So it's kind of E.T. in sort of super fast sneakers, lots of running around. And he buddies up with James Marsden, who's a cop.
A Montana cop.
Yes.
And let's not forget the rings. The rings are very important. The golden rings. Which allow him to hop from one dimension to another.
Yeah.
And escape whatever he's trying to outrun in the current place he's at. He loses his bag of rings in San Francisco. So, yeah, we get this sort of strange road trip with James Marsden and Sonic across the American West from Montana to San Francisco, being pursued by Jim Carrey.
Dr. Robotnik.
As Dr. Robotnik.
Yeah, the classic Sonic villain.
Hold up. I haven't seen this. Does this have anything
this
to
any
do
sense?
With the games at all?
Like? Not so much, really.
I loved the Mega Drive games in the 80s, 90s, I guess.
So this isn't ringing any bells?
Well,
it's got all the
rings,
elements of the
but
game.
Like not in that context.
Yeah, they've kind of they've reinvented the rings. They're like Doctor Strange type portals rather than he has to collect them. Here he's got to kind of keep hold of them and not lose them and use them to teleport.
And so what's Dr. Robotnik like this time in
this
version?
Yeah, he's the cleverest man in the world.
And this is clearly, it feels like when they were having the meeting about this, they were like, we'd get like a Jim Carrey type person to do Jim Carrey. And then they were like, should we call Jim Carrey? Oh, Jim Carrey's actually available. And he comes in and he does full-on Jim Carrey. Yeah. This is like the mask Jim Carrey. Completely gurning faces, physical dexterity, shouting in people's faces. Just completely off the wall. I nostalgically giggled away through this film because I was just delighted to see him doing that again.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if kids thought it was like, what's this man doing? But I enjoyed it, knowing his career and knowing what he's done in the past. Did you like it?
I wasn't so taken with him. I think he set the bar so high, in earlier roles, like in Batman Forever and Bruce Almighty and Lemony Snicket, things like that. So I didn't enjoy it quite as much as that. But I have to say, my son absolutely loved it. And he said it's one of the top five films ever made.
Ever made.
4 stars,
I have to admit, I haven't played the games, but from what I can understand, it's sort of an origin story for his character in as much as, no spoilers, but he progresses to the image we're more used to.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
In this one, he's sort of a black-clad baddie with gloves and full head of hair.
Yeah.
And he has henchmen and he is just got various robotic things.
Lots of drones.
That can shoot, kill, do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
The basic premise is that James Marsden and Sonic has to outrun those things, which they do in various amusing ways, with some side diversions,
interludes,
a rocker roadhouse.
Yeah, I thought that was the highlight, actually.
Where Sonic and James Marsden enter sort of like a rocker roadhouse and end up smashing the place up and doing line dancing and riding a bronco.
Wearing big hats.
Yeah, and this is really the sort of E.T. aspect of it, isn't it? Introducing Sonic to the pleasures of the human world.
Mm. It's a bit, yeah, it's a bit sort of E.T., Alvin and the Chipmunks. It falls between those two
Alvin
stores,
and the Chipmunks or E.T.?
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. One of those is considerably better than the other.
That's true, yes. Go Alvin.
So, Matthew, your son was obviously a massive fan, but do you think, is it worth people going to see it if they don't have kids to bring with them and entertain?
That's a good question, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's very much a family movie. It's not kind of quite sort of cool or hip enough. You know, not even as hip, I'd say, as Detective Pikachu, to invite an adult audience. It's very much... And lots of falling over, lots of gurning. So, yeah, it's really for parents with kids, I would say.
And is James Marsden any good? Because I feel like I haven't seen him in anything for a while.
Yeah, I thought he was really decent. I thought he was sort of every bloke, quite relatable.
He's very good at this sort of role. I mean, we've seen him do this in Hop. We've seen him do it in Enchanted. He's just a safe pair of hands for this sort of bewildered chap having to work with clearly tennis balls on sticks when he's actually filming it. Yeah. He has a really cute relationship with Sonic, who's voiced by
Ben Schwartz from Parks and Rec.
Of course. They have sweet banter and you know, some great one-liners about farts, amongst other things.
Yeah,
it's sort of like
the
Lighthouse at one point.
Lighthouse for kids.
Lighthouse for kids.
That's what we're calling it.
Yeah, and clearly they're setting this up for a franchise.
Yeah, it does.
Because you do get a
sequel.
Post-credit little sting, which you won't... say what that is. But yeah, so they're thinking it's going to make good money. It's coming out at half term. They know what they're doing, right?
You've made it sound a lot more intriguing than I thought about it.
Have
from
we sold
having
it to you,
just
Matt?
Watched the trailers.
So that's Sonic, which is out on the 14th of February. A romantic movie for anybody, I think, depending
Valentine's
on
Day
your
choice.
Taste. Let's move on from pop culture then to a literary classic.
Emma.
So that is Emma, which is also out on the 14th of February. This is more of a traditional romantic fare. For those of us who haven't read Emma, Matt, what's it about?
If you've never read Jane Austen's Emma or seen Clueless for that matter, it's basically...
Or any of the massive amounts of adaptations.
It's the ridiculous number they've been over the
Gwinnie
years.
One.
It's basically the story of this girl called Emma in the early 19th century, and she's very rich and very spoiled, lives with her dad in a big kind of country mansion. And she basically passes the time sort of setting people up romantically around her while perhaps neglecting her own romantic needs until it's
almost
too late.
Almost too late.
And it dawns on her that maybe she needs to set herself up as well. So that's the basic gist. I think that's kind of basically what you need to know about the story.
And also a woman who sort of learns that maybe she doesn't have all the answers, even though she is smart and witty and clever, as everyone tells her. She's not totally smart and witty and clever in everything. Do we need another adaptation of Emma? What does this one bring to the table?
Probably no.
That wasn't a good start, was it?
No, it wasn't. No, I did actually quite like it. I did enjoy it. It's very easy viewing, but... Yeah, I mean, like Matt says, we've had Clueless, we've had the classic teen update.
Wasn't there a TV one not that long ago as well?
Probably, yeah. And there was like the Gwyneth Paltrow version in the mid-90s, which I think is fairly well regarded. Yeah. So, yeah, we weren't crying out for another Emma, and this is quite a traditional treatment, really.
Yeah, it's directed by Autumn de Wilde, who has previously made pop videos, music videos for bands. And she brings that sort of aesthetic to this, that it's very... fast, it's very quick beats, it's quick cuts, it's got a very sort of trilly little soundtrack by Phoebe Waller-Bridge's sister, Isabel Waller-Bridge. It's all very peppy, isn't it?
Very quirky, looks very nice.
Yeah,
it's got a bit of a
really
beautiful costumes, gorgeous houses,
and it's
all
a bit
of the
Wes
things.
Anderson-y in the way it's very nicely framed,
chocolate
pastel colours.
Chapter headings have a full stop after them, so there's a little
for the grammar oak among us. But for my money, it was a bit too much of that. It was all a little bit frantic and a little bit too peppy, and it felt really mannered, and the romance of the thing didn't come across, so I didn't feel swoony at all by the time she actually realised she loved another person in the film. It just felt very, very mannered and too quirky. How about you?
Yeah, I think it would probably work better as a comedy than a romance, because you've got Bill Nighy popping in every now and again as her father. He's very funny, as you would imagine. It's very Bill Nighy
role. He's doing a lot of heavy lifting, isn't he? He's doing all the hard work here.
And Miranda Hart's actually very good as well.
Yeah, she's well cast. And I think Anya Taylor-Joy, I think she carries it. She's got the right poise and intelligence and comic timing for it.
I actually thought there was a reasonable amount of chemistry between Anya Taylor-Joy and Johnny Flynn, who plays Mr. Knightley, her kind of love interest. Ultimately, I think I found Emma just too bratty of a character, and I found it quite hard to relate to a lot of the kind of problems of these people. Like, it didn't feel like, say, like Little Women, which really tunes into the relevances to the modern day. This just felt a bit
film
like
for today, isn't it?
What's this got to do with me?
She's a very difficult character to play because she is, you know, stuck up. She is a spoiled princess. She doesn't know everything. She makes mistakes. She's a snob. She's unkind. She's cruel. But you, from the book, you should always be able to feel that Emma has her heart in the right place. She's just got the blinkers on and she's just misguided. And it felt like there was too much of the sort of barbed wit and social sort of rudeness to her in this that you couldn't really see that nice side of her until really far on in the film, in which case you've gone so far that you kind of actively disliked her rather than sympathised with her or sort of wanted her to see the error of her ways. Was that the problem, do you think?
Partly, and as you kind of sort of touched on there, it's very long as well, I think, for a film that is so predictable. Whether you've sort of read it, seen it before, you know where it's going. You know kind of which characters are going to end up together right from the very beginning. And it's kind of at least 2 hours, isn't it?
It's kind of it's a bit stop start,
which for a film where you just know, where you know exactly what kind of tracks it's on, that was just kind of too long for me.
And let's talk about the fact, though, it does do something different. It provides us with male nudity in this version that you don't often get nudity in a Jane Austen but here you get a man's bottom. Did that it felt really weird to me. Like, I understand the sort of concept that the director is saying, we look at women all the time in this way. Now in this film, we're going to actually look at a man with a sort of female gaze and look at his bottom as he comes in for a ride and his valet strips him down. But it also felt really jarring to me. Like, it felt too,
I thought it was quite tongue-in-cheek.
Really. Oh, Matthew. Oh,
as it were.
I also thought there was something interesting because that whole sequence, you're seeing him getting dressed up in his finery, and you don't often see the sheer number of layers that go into that type of outfit. So I wondered if it was sort of making a point about stripping it back, what they were really like underneath or whatever, underneath all these kind of ornamental gowns. But it was either that or it was like, look at this guy's hot buns. Could be both.
What about Josh O'Connor, who's currently in The Crown playing Prince Charles? He plays this very sort of creepy social climbing vicar, and he's surrounded by people who are in the cast of Sex Education. So there's lots of TV faces that we know. There's also Mia Goth playing Harriet, who is Emma's poor sort of friend who she takes under her wing. Did you like all the other people that were in the film?
Yeah, although I did keep sort of matching them. Clueless is one of my favourite movies ever. It's probably my favourite teen comedy, so I kept sort of matching them to the characters in Clueless and sort of reminiscing about that during the more dull bits. I have to say, I was kind of thinking about Brittany Murphy and
R.I.P.
all the others, Wallace Shawn and Dion.
If you're thinking about another film whilst you're it's probably not a great recommendation.
But it was very easy viewing there.
Two supporting characters from Sex Education. They've clearly gone for casting where they've gone people with very unusual kind of quirky faces. Obviously a very beautiful cast, but perhaps you'd say not conventionally. It kind of heightens it in a way, but it sort of distances it in another way, because you almost feel the artifice and you really feel what they're going for.
It does feel
so
arch,
quirky,
doesn't
and
it?
Idiosyncratic, which in a way I guess differentiates it from the previous films. It does give it quite a modern feel, because I guess Sex Education feels very, very modern and now, but maybe didn't entirely work.
But if you're looking for a film that's romantic, that you don't have to think very hard about, it's a good Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it's a good date.
Date night movie.
Thumbs halfway up.
Yeah. So that's not a great recommendation, but there you go. You've got Emma, which is also out on Valentine's Day. Okay, let's remember that it's not just brand spanking newbies that are out this week. There's also a couple of retro classics re-releasing. Shall we get our pottery wheels ready?
Let's go.
Hungered for your touch along lonely time.
How could we forget That's Ghost? Do you think that deserves a re-release? Do today's audiences need to see this on the big screen? Do they need to see the pottery wheel? Listen to the Righteous Brothers?
Yeah, probably. It probably is, because it's 30 years old now. It's probably a film that a lot of people know about, and they know the iconic scene, but they might not necessarily have seen the whole thing.
They probably know like the skits that have come from that pottery scene. Been,
yeah, it's one of the most than the actual, parodied moment ever. I mean, Wallace and Gromit did it in there. Yes. And, Naked Gun
Naked
did
Gun,
it.
Naked Gun, yes, yeah. Who can forget that?
Just endless amounts.
It's also kind of harks back to a fascinating era where it was the biggest film of the year in 1990, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
So like certain, back in the days where kind of romantic drama could be the biggest film of the year,
just feels like such a
bygone era.
So not based on anything.
Yeah, that's about a woman having sort of a sexual dance with a ghost. In case you haven't seen it, Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze are a young couple in love in New York. She has very trendy haircut and very lots of grey sweaters. Yeah. And he is murdered one night and comes back as a ghost. And Whoopi Goldberg plays the medium who can hear him. And there's a strange scene when he sort of gets inside Whoopi's body and becomes her, and they have a sort of nice sexual dance. So this is the precursor to the sort of dementors that we saw in Harry Potter.
Yeah, definitely.
The sort of darkness that comes for you and takes you to hell
are
these sort of groaning dark shadows that when they come and get you.
Yeah. Got those dark undertones.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I loved this when it came out. I thought it was so romantic and wonderful. And I still, to this day, cry when they say ditto to each other.
Yeah.
And Demi Moore is such a beautiful crier.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's one of the best on-screen criers.
She is a great crier.
In history.
I haven't seen it for years, but I do remember sobbing at it when I was younger.
It pushes all the emotional buttons. So that's a great Valentine's Day movie to take your other half out to, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm definitely due a revisit of it, It's been a long time, probably close to 30 years since I've seen it. So
you'll be in line for that one. The other one, if you don't want to go romantic, you could go bloodletting.
Michael and Sam have just moved to Santa Carla, California. They're about to discover its secret.
Notice anything unusual about Santa Carla yet?
No. It's a pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire.
Oh, that's The Lost Boys. I loved The Lost Boys when it came out.
So 80s.
So 80s. Matt, what's it about?
A man named Michael who moves to Santa Carla and he falls in with basically a bunch of cool young vampires and becomes a vampire himself and has shenanigans with them.
Shenanigans.
That's the very basics I can give you. Is that fair?
Let's talk about, the people that are in this. I mean, when this film came out, it was the hottest actors of the day. Kiefer Sutherland, Jason Patrick, the Coreys, Corey Feldman.
The guy with the sax.
Jamie Kurtz. These people were so cool with their mullets and their dangly earrings and their overcoats. It was massive at the time.
And Kiefer's the leader of this vampire gang. He's got an amazing mullet. You obviously would want to join his gang if you were new in town.
Incredibly charismatic in it.
It's Jason Patrick's signature role for sure.
Definitely.
Kind of touch this.
And it is really sort of cool and poppy.
Yeah.
And actually quite scary in places. This sort of insidious idea that, they sort of gaslight him to a little degree at the beginning, don't they? Sort of telling him that his Chinese takeaway is worms and that he's eating maggots and things. And he actually wonders, am I actually losing it? Or am I imagining this until they actually fly and drop off a bridge? But it's
the
also
bridge scene's a great scene.
That's the
but it also
moment,
is this sort of quite lovely story about family. I mean, this, like E.T., it's a couple of boys who their mum's recently divorced. They're trying to find this new life with a single parent family. And it's what do you do when your world is upturned and they've just moved to this town? The older brother falls in with vampires. The younger brother takes everything in his power to rescue his brother and to clean the town of vampires. Yeah. It's actually a really kind of heartwarming story as well as all the blood.
Yeah, it's got some heart, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's also Santa Cruz, which is where Us was filmed. So it's the same boardwalk, beach, Santa Cruz in Northern California. Yeah. So where I lived for a little bit. People were indeed strange there. And
The soundtrack's great as
Isn't it? There's a great soundtrack.
Echo and the Bunnymen.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's an absolute cracker. And actually, if you haven't seen it, it is worth going out and seeing it on the big screen. Having a Chinese after, maybe.
Check for worms.
On a bridge on the way home.
Cool. Bleach your hair, have a mullet.
So that's quite the selection. There's Sonic, Emma, Ghost and the Lost Boys to choose.
That's a whole buffet, isn't
for
it?
For your
really?
Romantic pleasure. If I was going out, I'd go for the Lost Boys. What about you?
Ghost.
I'd probably go for Emma, to be honest.
And now it's time for our regular section, which is Is It Bollocks? Which last week we found out if Indiana Jones could get onto a U-boat. The answer was no. What are we asking this week?
So this time we're looking at Marvel antihero Venom and we're asking, can you really get a psychotic parasite like Tom Hardy does in Venom, where it infects you and changes your personality drastically?
It's funny you should ask that, because we asked the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine if that was possible. They said that it's possible.
It's possible? Oh my God.
It's possible to have a parasite that actually changes you. What's not possible is to have an alien parasite, because obviously that's rubbish. But basically, the sickness known as sleeping sickness is spread by bites of flies in parts of Africa, and the parasites enter the system and multiply, causing a fever, which then gets into your nervous system, which is the brain, the spinal cord and the nerves, and then they affect the brain. So basically people can become agitated, suffer from delusions, they can change their behaviour, they become uncharacteristically rude, aggressive and careless.
I think you might have it, Matt.
Well, I know this is a good excuse, right? People have, you know, sort of stood up and weed in the corner of their living room and done all sorts of things that are out of their natural behaviour. And when a mouse has it, the parasite affects the mouse so that it changed its normal fear of predators to an attraction. And it's also proposed that based on that behaviour in mice, that risk-taking behaviour is a change in personality that is affected by this, and it might make humans that have it more likely to be involved in road traffic accidents. So in a word, yes, you can be changed, but you cannot be changed to biting people's heads off. No. So that's good.
I want to see an ultra-realistic Venom 2 now.
Which is just sleeping sickness.
Yeah, with mice.
Mice being unafraid of cats.
Yeah.
And Tom Hardy sleeping.
And being, I bet even that would be interesting.
And being
to watch.
Uncharacteristically rude to people. That's it for this episode. There's just time for another reader question. Are you ready for it?
Go on.
Okay, Gary French wants to know, if it's as boring attending awards ceremonies as it is watching them. Well, yeah, in a word,
yeah,
I think.
It can be, yeah.
You know, you're sitting there for hours.
Yeah,
you've not eaten. You're surrounded by people in taffeta and nobody's bringing any food. And they do go on a while. But
it hurts your hands as well.
There's a lot of clapping.
A lot of clapping.
Yes. Generally, they're on quite late at night, so you're tired as well. But the plus side is you do get to see what people are doing that you don't see on camera. So, you know, I saw Helena Bonham Carter running to the loo with no shoes on in between awards. You see people eating their secret snacks, and they do bring them in their handbags. And you see people who are talking to each other who you wouldn't think were friends.
Yeah.
So it's fun, but in
gives
a word,
you an insight.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it is quite cool to walk down the red carpet and see all of the famous people surrounding
pretend
you.
Pretend you're one of them as well.
And pretend you're Scorsese for the day. Okay, so that's it for now. Let's wrap up by saying, as we always do, that there's 10% off total film subscriptions with the code INSIDETF at checkout at www.myfavouritemagazines.co.uk. All right, that's it for us. Join us next week and have a very happy Valentine's Day.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.